Well, Joshua chapter 10, start with this. Within this chapter, we've got a position where God works through human unwisdom. You remember when the Gibeonites come to Joshua and they pretend that they are from a far country and they pretend that they got beat up clothes and food that's gone moldy, and they say, "Oh, would you make a treaty with us?" Of course, Joshua should have investigated. Of course, he should have been suspicious that these people were actually who they were. They were local people who were being deceptive, but he doesn't. You could say that it was unwisdom. And yet, you see how God works through human unwisdom. Well, the Gibeonites make this agreement, and yes, they do accept it when they say, "Yep, we're Gibeonites." Okay, so Joshua accepts them and says, "Well, all right, we'll be true to our word." And then, verse 5, a bit later, the five kings of the Amorites all come up and attack Gibeon. And the men of Gibeon, verse 6, sent to Joshua and said, "Don't abandon us. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us." So Joshua was tested there as to whether he was going to go along with his promise and treat them truly as brethren or not, and renege on his promise. To be faithful to these Gibeonites meant he was going to have to go and fight a huge coalition of these five powerful local kings. Well, he does do the right thing and he honours his word, and God gives him an amazing victory, which means that the strength of the Canaanites is now seriously dented because this huge coalition of the five kings is destroyed. Now, I think that shows how God works through human unwisdom. When people make a mistake, and we all make mistakes, God doesn't just say, "Ah, well, you messed up, didn't you? Your fault." He works through it, and this is one of the most wonderful features of our God, that he works through human sin rather than just turning away in disgust. The gods of the nations were not like that. You messed up. You did the wrong thing. Well, there was supposed to be punishment and rejection. You had to be obedient. It was a bit like the God of Islam, all about submission rather than dialogue, rather than two-way negotiation, and God accepting your failures and working with you, even when you are unwise. And yet, the victory was from God. Verse 10, Yahweh confused them before Israel, and he slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon. And, of course, the point is that God gave the victory and that he worked through this. And yet you see this understanding of God as a God who is, in that sense, open and flexible. When Joshua then speaks to God, verse 12, "Sun, stand still on Gibeon. You, moon, stop in the valley of Ajalon." Now, this was an amazing moment. It was amazing spiritual ambition to pray for a longer day so that they could inflict the more damage on their enemies, so that they could follow up this victory that God had given them that was, in any case, based on their unwisdom. And to actually ask God for more time, of course, presupposes that they are going to win. He's absolutely strong in faith now, and he commands that the sun and moon stand still, and the sun and moon did stand still, verse 13. And of course, the comment is quite rightly, verse 14, "There was no day like that before it or after it, that Yahweh listened to the voice of a man, for Yahweh fought for Israel." So he had the ambition to ask God to do this, and God does it. He listened to the voice of a man. Now, what happened in mechanical terms, I think, is a bit unwise to speculate. If it sort of literally happened, as stated here, this would mean the whole cosmos stopped. There was a rearrangement of, in fact, everything, not simply the solar system, but absolutely everything had to get rearranged. Uninhabited planets right out in space would have had to somehow stop, and everything didn't go flying off the edge and all this kind of thing. It's been suggested that the amount of time that was, as it were, created here, it was then sort of readjusted in the cosmos at the time when Hezekiah asks for a sign, and the shadow on the sundial of Ahaz goes back by 10 degrees. to show he's been given 15 more years of life. Whether that is true or not, I don't think it's here nor there. The point is, God did a miracle in response to the words of a man. And my point is that this is spiritual ambition. And it's so different to the idea of simple submission, obedience. This is what God says we must do, and we've got to get on and do it. And if you don't do it, well, then that is the end of it, sort of thing. You know, that's the problem. That is the problem with all legalistic religion. The fact is that God is open to negotiation. And isn't this what parents love? That your children take the initiative and come up with an idea. Could you do this? Yeah, God can do anything. And of course, he wanted it done so that he could do God's work. And when was the last time that you raised your sights a bit? Did you ask God for something? When was the last time you did this? Because if it's all about obedience and submission, well, you trudge through life very aware that you don't make it all the time in terms of obedience and submission. But God is not, I'm not saying he's not looking for obedience. I'm not saying that obedience doesn't count. But I'm saying that he thirsts for relationship above all. And we can take initiative. And this is one of the things that genuine two-way relationship with God inspires in you. That I would like to do this for God. God, please. And if you're properly motivated, he's thrilled with that and will respond.